Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
The men who shared their stories lived on the part of the campus where researchers are trying to exhume at least 100 bodies in unmarked graves. A road separates the area from the rest of the campus.
We're here to wake up America concerning Dosha. That's why we're here.
That's Florida chairman of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Art Rocker, speaking in front of dormitories on the so-called black side of the Dozier campus. The school, notorious for decades of harsh treatment of boys, closed 2 years ago. Johnny Gatti was 11 years old in 1957 when he says police picked him up in Dade City and sent him to Dozier. He says guards would send dogs after boys who tried to run away, and he never saw several of them again. What's more, he was counseled not to talk about what he saw.
And when I was taking the pit, the garbage to the pit, and I told the guy, I looked just like a boy hand right there. He said, Johnny, don't ever say that again. He said, if you want to not be like that, don't ever say that again. So everything we seen and heard, we just had to not see it and not hear it.
School records show admittance dates for several boys, but no corresponding release dates. Researchers want to exhume bodies there to find out whether it's a case of shoddy record keeping or something worse. Paula Johnson, a Syracuse University law professor who heads the Cold Case Justice Initiative, says her team supports University of South Florida anthropologist Erin Kimmerly in her fight to get exhumation permits from the state.
And so even though these harms happened in the 40s and the 50s and into the 1960s, there is never a time limit on demanding justice and on getting justice.
Florida Secretary of State Ken Detzner has denied previous requests to exhume the bodies at Dozier, but State Attorney General Pam Bondi says Detzner misunderstood the law and should have granted the permit. Bondi and the rest of the Florida cabinet, including Governor Rick Scott, will take up the permitting issue once again on Tuesday. For WFSU News, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Context of white supremacy, Gus T. Renegade, and for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Wednesday, August 31st, 2016. So I have been told. Very important information, particularly I know we have a substantial number of listeners in the Sunshine State of Florida. I've stated consistently one of the ways that we can go about studying racism, white supremacy, every single black person, you should be real knowledgeable. Like that should be one of your hobbies in terms of studying the history of what has happened to black people in your particular part of the world, bad and good, because there have been some just incredible accomplishments as well. But that should be one of the things that we dedicate our time and energy to. Particularly, I say this, if you have children, if you are a resident, if you are a black parent in the state of Florida, you should definitely take time to inform, educate your children and yourself about the Dozier Reform School in Florida and what that means to the history of black people in that area of the world, what that reveals about the system of racism, white supremacy. That's it. Earlier in the month, we were fortunate to have as a guest on the program Miss Antoinette Harrell. We discussed her phenomenal research, her book, Dark Days of Horror at Dozier, Rapes, Murders, Beatings, and Slavery. Just fantastic information. It was a real pleasure to have her on the program. I think a lot of listeners even though it was painful to hear, but just really important information. A lot of folks were very thankful that we were able to have her on the program. And I said during that broadcast that I made a major error that I was going through reading the book and thinking, man, I really should have requested if we could have got some of the victims, because she interviews and just allows a lot of the black children, black boys who went through this. They are adults now, but she allows them to just kind of share some of their experiences, what they saw, what they went through, how they were abused and tortured at this Dozier Reform School. And she told us, hey, you should have Pastor Gaddy on the program. I think he would be willing to share and talk about what he experienced. And, you know, I'll do what I can to help you get in touch with him to see if you can get him on the program. She was true to her word and really hooked us up with information. Pastor Gaddy was willing to speak with us, and they actually co-authored a book together that we will discuss this evening. That book, They Told Me Not to Tell, Dozier Reform School Was a Living Hell. And this focuses specifically on our guest for this evening, Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy. Pastor Gaddy, are you with us, sir?
Yes, sir, I'm right here.
Outstanding. So glad to have you with us. And as I stated, the person who was so instrumental in helping us get Pastor Gaddy with us this evening, she is also with us as well, Miss Antoinette Harrell. You're with us as well, ma'am?
Yes, I am.
Outstanding. So glad to have the both of you with us. We'll start with Pastor Gaddy. For folks who might not be familiar with Dozier and don't know who you are, this might be their first time hearing from you. Just anything that you would like listeners to know about who you are before we get started?
Yes, my name is Johnny Lee Gaddy, and I'm from Dade City, Florida, and I went to Dozier. We call it at the time I went there, it was called it the Formatory School. I went there for, found out later, truancy, but I always thought it was playing hooky from school. And they told me one evening I was home with my mother, they said, we want you to, the judge want to see you. And I went to see what the officer wanted, and he told me the judge would be at the courthouse, and they want you to come in and talk with him. And I went there, and when I got there, I fell asleep in one of the cells. By 4 o'clock the next morning, I asked him, I was still waiting on the judge. He said, "Nah, nigga, you going to Mariana?" And I said, "Well, you gonna let my mama know?" He said, "We'll let her know in time." So they put me in the car. They took me to Mariana. And when I got there, that's how, when my hell really began.
And you were only 11 years old at this time?
Right. I was 11.
Wow. And this was 1957. Is that correct?
1957 is correct.
Wow. Wow. Just for context, if people want to think about things that are happening, this is the same year that the Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas, was quote-unquote integrated, when they had to bring in the National Guard to make that happen. That was also happening in 1957. And just to bring in Miss Antoinette Harrell, again, she was just with us earlier this month. We talked about her book. Before I get my question in, just if you want to remind folks the work that you do and how you got connected to this topic and Pastor Gaddy.
Yeah, I had spent the last 10 years researching penance and involuntary servitude, and I came across a journal that mentioned the word penance that really got my attention at Dozier Reform School. And it, at that point, I reached out to a man named Roger Dean Kaiser, who mentioned to me that there was black men on that side of the campus, on the other side of the campus. So at that time, I started opening up contacts to be in contact with black men. And Pastor Gaddy heard the radio talk show, the blog talk show I was doing at the present time, and he called in and he left his number, and we started talking about his experience, and then we have been really connected ever since. We're trying to help him tell about his life experience. I don't like to say story, but his life experience and the atrocities that he went through as a student at Dozier Reform School.
And I think when we spoke with you on the program and the book, the books that you've written on this topic, I think you make it very clear what was happening to Pastor Gaddy and these other black boys at the Dozier Reform School, that this was slavery well after what we have been told, emancipation, the end of slavery. Just can you make that clear for our listeners?
Yeah, there was hundreds of thousands of people in 18 states that I counted and 27 counties in Mississippi. But when I got to Dozier Reform School, I never in my wildest imagination did I ever think at any time that a system would be created in a school that would definitely use the free labor of these boys to for their own financial gains. And Pastor Gaddy, as he talked more in that in the interview, he really shined the spotlight on the slavery that was taking place by at the school and what they was doing as boys, what kind of work they was doing at the school. And I'm more to show that tonight, Pastor Gaddy would get deeply into how their labor was taken from them, and that's all it was set up in the first place to do, is to get free labor.
Wow. And this school in operation until 2011, more than a century that this school was in operation, and in my view, torturing and abusing young children, in particular black boys. Pastor Gaddy, did you think of it, what you experienced at Dozier Reform School? Did you think of it as, wow, I was enslaved, you know, from the time I was 11 years old?
Well, I kind of really didn't know I was exactly in a slave. I think I was being punished for going to school, but looking at the history of the black man, I began to understand. See, we got up by a bugle in the morning, and we had to go to we had odd and even days, and we had a crew that they assigned me to was a farm crew, and we had to go in the swamp and cut down trees and pull the stumps out and drain the water, and we had boys. We had a two-handed saw, and we had boys 6 years old wasn't able to pull the saw. I mean, I had to push and pull the saw, and then I had to go under the mud and hook the stump where they tried to can pull them out the woods. And we had to take the logs to the sawmill, and they made 2x4s and 2x6 lumber, and we had everything that we raised. We raised every kind of vegetable, hog, cows, any kind of food that you can name, we raised it there. And the white boys didn't have to do any of the farm work. All the black boys at the time I was there, we did all the farm work. And the white people, the only way we got a chance to see them when we went to the doctor or something on the white side. And then we had to look down at their feet. We couldn't look down at their face, up at their face. We had to look at their feet. And it was kind of rough.
Wow. Wow. When you arrived in 1957, they said for truancy and what have you, did they explain how long you were going to be there? Did they explain what you had to do in order to be able to go back to your family?
No, they didn't explain any of that. They told me it's up to me how long I wanted to be there. But they had wrote in there, I asked one of the directors, how long will you have to be here? He said, most of the guys leave in 6 months. And it all depends on you.
Wow. Wow. Context of white supremacy. And your parents were not brought to the school? Like, this wasn't anything where they're bringing you into this program and having your parents and explaining what's going to happen with your mom and you together, anything like that? That did your mom come to the school when they were bringing you into the program?
Never went to the school. None of my brothers and sisters ever came to the school. I didn't see them for 5 years.
Wow.
I was the ward of this. See, my father had died, and my mother was getting government help. So they always told us that we was a ward of the state.
Wow. Wow. Can you just kind of explain to our listeners, like, what a typical day looked like? You said you all had odd and even days, so you would work out in the farm and the swamps clearing lumber and what have you, and then you would go to school on opposite days. Can you just kind of explain what a regular day at Dozier would look like for you?
Well, what a regular day was working, and then we went to school, and they would have some kind of planet that they would show us how to grow different peas, everything was consist of work, and we couldn't really get together with one another. And see, by being the only boy from my hometown, I really didn't have nobody that I could relate with. So I mostly stayed to myself a lot and was dressed up for work.
Mm. And so you said you all would get up. At what time in the morning would they get you up to kind of start your day?
Around about 5:30. We had to be online about 6. And it went to the 8 about 7 and to work.
Wow. You were 11 when you started at Dozier in 1957. What do you remember, like, the age range of the children, like youngest to oldest children that were there during your time?
Well, we had different cottages for different boy age bracket. I was in the smallest cottage at one time. Our cottage name was Robinson, and the next one was Bunch, and the next one was Lewis. And they had one named Carver, then one named McLean, and then one named Bethune. Those McLean and Bethune was for the big boys. Robinson and Bunch and Lee was for the little boys.
Do you remember, like, the youngest age of any of the children that were there that you saw?
Some in our college, I think the youngest one was in my college was 6.
Wow. Wow. And he was expected to do the same type of work, to go out and, you know, saw down this lumber and work with the animals, do picking crops and what have you?
He did that kind of work. He wouldn't expect. He didn't want to go to the White House.
Wow. Wow. Can you explain to our listeners what the White House was and the type of things that happened there?
The White House was a yellow building. I guess they eventually painted it white. And I went over there I had got on a tractor crew then. I got a little bigger. They put me on a tractor crew, and the guy, me and him, was hauling vegetable out the field. So he said he didn't want to work that morning, so he going to bust the tires on the trailer. So I said, I ain't going to bust them. So when I got to work, he bust the tires and had told it. Me and him I bust the tires because I didn't tell. They rode both of us. And when I got to the White House, he said, you would never even want to look at another tire. And I didn't know what this guy was talking about. He said, well, I want you to take your, we had to wear our shirt in. He said, I want you to take your shirt out. I want you to lay down on that bed. I want you to, it had a notch on the wall. I want you to look at that notch on that wall. I want you to grab that railing or headboard. And I want you, don't turn it loose. Don't turn loose that headboard. If you turn that headboard loose, I can hit you between your balls and I can kill you. if you don't kill some guys up here, you don't want that to happen to you. I said, no, sir. He said, well, you better get on that bed and you better hold it. And when I laid on that bed and that guy hit me, I ain't never experienced a lick like that in my life. And man, I jumped up and, oh, that was the wrong thing to do. He hit me in my head, hit me on my back. And he said, nigga, you don't get back down there, I'm going to kill you. I ain't know what to do. I called mama and God, anybody come help me. But I got back on that bed, and I had to hold it because he wasn't going to stop hitting me. And when he turned me loose, I actually, my behind, he had to pull all the meat off my butt with the belt because he had holes in the belt, and every time he hit me, the suction from the belt would suck my skin off my body. And I asked him, I said, is I'm going to go to the doctor? He said, no, it's time to go eat. And you going in there just like that, I want you to let the rest of them niggas see that I ain't playing with you guys. And I had to go in there and sit down on a pillow for about a couple of weeks because my behind was so raw. And when I took a bath, my clothes were stuck into my body, and that was painful. And I would tell my college father how much pain. He said, well, that's what happened when you don't do what you're told.
Context of white supremacy, our guest, Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy, were the individuals who were doing these beatings, were they white people? Was it black people? Was it both?
It was both. Mm-hmm. We had a black guy doing most of it. We couldn't call it a beating. We had to call it a spanking.
Mm-hmm.
They wrote my mama a letter. They said, well, I had to spank Johnny today. So my mama was under the impression that half of my body she didn't know was had been almost torn in half. She said spanking, that was kind of eased it off.
Wow. In the book that you and Miss Harrell co-authored, They Told Me Not to Tell, Dozier Reform School Was a Living Hell. You talk in detail just not only about the physical abuse, but just the impact of being called a nigger constantly. It seems like this was an all-day thing, and you just even described it while you were being just brutally beaten, that you were being called nigger then as well. Just can you talk about how that impacted you, being called nigger constantly?
Well, really, I was called that in my hometown, so when I used to leave the game, I had to run, try to go home at night from baseball. I love baseball, and the white guys would wait down the road to try to kill me. So I heard the nigger word quite often. But the goal in trying to get help with kids, I didn't expect that to happen like that. They had a blue Ford used to come around our college, and the fear of that car, everybody trembled when that car would stop in front of the college. That's just how scared we were.
Wow. Were the white children, because for folks who have been following, if you heard when we had Miss Antoinette Harrell on the program earlier this month, and certainly what's been happening at Dozier with the bodies being exhumed and more coverage of what took place for over a century at this institute. They had white children and black children at the school, but you talk in the book that the white children, doesn't seem that they were treated the same way. They were not subjected to the same type of abuse as the black children. Is that correct?
That's correct. No, they didn't. They got grieved when they was there. I met quite a few of the White House boys, and they were talking about the degrees they got. They said that they realized that our punishment was worse than what they got.
Wow. And
now the,
oh, I'm sorry.
I said they didn't really have to tell me that. I know that anyway.
Wow. Were the black staff members, were they allowed to administer these type of savage beatings to any of the white children that were there?
Well, see, I never known about the whites, me and Roy, because I wasn't allowed on their side. Lately, that the white guys, you know, just from word of mouth, guys say that both of them spanked them, the white and the black.
Hmm.
I really couldn't tell you that for sure because I wasn't there.
I see. Wow. I know with all of the beatings and the abuse that is discussed both in Ms. Harrell's book and in some of the other reports, the sexual abuse that took place at the Dozier Academy is, at least in my view, is one of the worst aspects of this just horrendous experience. You have talked pretty candidly about the fact that you were raped while you were there. Is that true?
That's good, Ray.
Wow.
Did they take us off the campus and let men take advantage of us as children? They had different guys at different times. Not only me, quite a few of the young guys. We know what had happened to them when they came back late at night to the cottages.
Did the staff at the Dozier School, did they know that children were being raped and sexually molested?
I think it's almost they had to know. But see, we couldn't say nothing. And who could we tell? I tried to tell what happened to me, and I like to got beat to death. So we just couldn't tell nobody. Everybody was your enemy. They was there to teach us. I don't know what they was trying to teach us.
Wow. Did you try to tell your parents, you know, hey, I'm being raped, I'm being abused? Did you try to tell your mom?
Well, see, I wasn't had that much education. And they wrote our letters to our parents.
I see. Wow.
That's what she got.
Wow. Wow. With the sexual abuse, like, how old were you when that began, when you started being sexually molested, raped, while you were at Dozier?
I was short out there, goddamn.
Was there anything that you could try to do to protect yourself from this? Was there anything that you could do to try to just get away from any of this?
I had a guy out there that had us on a medicine. His name was Dr. Susie. And he gave us soup that's supposed to help us. And he was a psychiatrist. And later we found out through the years that he didn't even have a degree to be practicing on us. He was using us as guinea pigs. But the soup really didn't work.
Wow, this Dr. Souza, that you say he was not even licensed to be practicing medicine, did he have white children working with him while he was doing these experiments on the black children? Do you remember what sort of things the white students or white children that were helping him, do you remember what sort of things they were doing?
They put some kind of electric on our body and our hands and legs and on our head because they said we was depressed and they had to do that. They didn't want us killing ourselves.
Wow. This soup that they made you take, do you remember how you felt after you took the soup?
Yeah, like I wanted to get out of there. I ain't feel nothing, but you couldn't tell him that you didn't feel nothing. So you had to lie, tell it. It was working. You feel a lot better. I didn't kill myself, so it must have worked.
Were children being killed at Dozier while you were there?
We didn't ever see a person being killed. We know that we seen some bodies in, like I say, in different areas, body parts, but actually seeing the murder of the boy, we had one boy came back. He had been ate up by the dogs, and he had ran away. And they go to the prison and get the dogs to run the boys down. And when they caught him, the dog had ate him up pretty bad. They brought him to the college and told him, in front of us, he had to lick the dog body parts and tell him that's the reward for catching him, and say, we're going to take him over here to the infirmary. And we didn't ever see him no more, and the cottage father told us he had to go home because he couldn't make it in here anymore. So we know that he didn't go home. So that was one I know that did die from them dogs and them people.
Did you see any body parts while you were there at Dozier?
Yeah, I saw body parts in the pit. I saw hands in the pit. And I saw foot in the hog pen. At the time I saw them, I had moved up to a tractor drive. And I'd be taking trash to the pit. That's where I saw the boy's body part, hand in the pit, and his foot in the hog pen. And I told the boy, I said, man, these people feeding these boys to the hog. But that's something you couldn't tell nobody. If you wanted to come out of there alive, the people was cruel.
Context of white supremacy. Various reports, as I've stated, the Dozier situation has got a lot more attention over the last few years, and they've been doing exhumations to retrieve the different remains on the campus. I think at least at this point, they've recovered more than 50 human remains from the site. At least you, and again, keeping in mind, the Dozier School in various names was in operation for more than a century. Pastor Gaddy, do you think it's possible that, you know, more than 50 children were killed during the time that this school was in operation?
Oh, yeah, a whole lot more. They, all the bodies that they found out of the 100 was on the black side, which is in Marana, which is black side, was the north campus. And I went back up there. And I hadn't been on that place in 50 years, and I went back to visit Mr. Rapp. We went to have a candlelight service, and they had a bus terminal. They had built a big old bus terminal on the property. And I told Miss Antoinette, I told her, and I told the lady was digging the bodies. I said, they done put building on top of them boards because they had a grave we used to go by every time we went to the farm. And I said, they done built a building on top of this boy's body.
Anyone who listens to this program, that tends to be a consistent pattern in terms of, number one, killing black people and just total disregard for black life, but then also frequently the disrespect and abuse continues beyond the physical death, either where there's just no regard for the human remains of black people, if they're at some sort of burial site or a cemetery. It can be turned into a park for dogs that happened in Virginia, just, you know, totally disregarded. We'll put a parking lot here or anything. That is seems to be a standard practice in the system of white supremacy worldwide. I want to bring Ms. Harrell in just to kind of put in context what we've heard so far from Pastor Gaddy, and she can set me straight if I left out any important details so far. Ms. Harrell, you want to put in context what we've heard thus far from Pastor Gaddy?
Well, no, I'm just listening to Pastor Gaddy as always. I've heard Pastor Gaddy share this his experience over 36 times, and each time that he tells his life experience, I'm just mesmerized and somewhat numb from just hearing him talk about what he had to go through. And I see why he called his book Dozer Was a Living Hell, because at that age, for a child of his age to have witnessed and experienced so much that he went through is only a blessing by the divine creator that he can hold on and not have mental problems, you know. We went back to Dozer. That was the first time that he had went back after, I guess, 50-something years and walking around that campus. But everything that Pastor Gaddy told me in the interview, and when I started doing the research, I found that it was worse. It was a living hell.
Wanted to ask as well, because you have a photograph. This is in the book you just mentioned, They Told Us Not to Tell. This is on page 88, where it's a photograph of it, at least it's credited. It's a photograph of a funeral at Dozier. It's a black and white photograph. It's from the archives, University of South Florida. Do you know any more details about this, if this was indeed a funeral, this photograph, if you know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, I see the one you're talking about, but that wasn't probably before I got there.
Okay. I guess. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, sir.
I had a lot of pictures in the archive. Actually, wasn't true. The archives is where they had the record of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that record that wasn't accurate.
What were some of the things that were inaccurate about the record when she started looking through it?
Well, they said I was in there for 2 times. I went up there twice, and I only went once. I guess they were stretching them 5 years into 2 times. And then they said I was a pilot, which was the highest rank on second highest rank on the campus. And I didn't know how to ever come up at the lowest rank on the campus, because they would always have guys to pick argument with me. See, because if you get in a fight and you was the grub zero, you had to ride to the White House. And every rank you stepped down, it took you 3 months to come out of it. So that wasn't accurate either.
Does it seem like they were in the archives? Does it seem like they were trying to make it better than it was, so people wouldn't think, oh, this was horrible, the things that were going on?
Well, a lot of the people that I talked to, I went back about a week ago. I went to Mayram.
Mm.
Some of the older guys, and they swear that it wasn't that bad. I don't know who they was getting their information from. But and a lot of it, Marana was a Klan-run town, and those people say they were scared to help us, help the black boys, because they'd have killed their family.
And these were black people that, black families that lived close to the Dozier School that were afraid to help you all?
Right.
Hmm. Wow. Wow.
Fear they had in them.
Hmm. Did they, were you threatened as well? Did they tell you, you know, hey, if you try to tell what happened to you here at Dozier, that we could hurt your family as well as you? Did they tell you that?
Well, me and Mrs. Rell, my daughter, and four other guys, we went to have a candlelight service for the fallen guys. And we got letters that if we went to Mary Randall, they was going to hang us. We went anyway. They didn't hang us.
Wow. So this is more recent. This is not back when you were a child. This is more recent when you all were going back and researching all of this.
I was full grown then.
Wow. Do you remember what year this was?
2013, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. Wow. Just if folks want to put that in context as well, that would be a year after Trayvon Martin was killed in Florida, and I believe the same year that Jordan Davis was killed in Florida. Progress, so they tell me. Did you all go to the police with that? I mean, that seems like a terroristic threat. Did you all contact the police?
No, we didn't. Well, they rode by where we was at the courthouse. Mr. Rowell was with us. We was at the courthouse, and they drove by shooting birds at us. Calling nigger.
In 2013?
Uh-huh.
Wow. Wow. Ms. Harrell, no, you all didn't contact the police? Were you all afraid? Were you all, any notion to, hey, maybe we should stop this? Maybe this is not safe?
Absolutely not. We did not contact the police. Because we felt like they were just trying to scare us from not going down to Dozier. Although the white men had been to Dozier several times and was able to take photographs and went on the white side of the campus. So when the black men started to want to go down there, it was always a lot of kind of chaotic situations involving that. But we went anyway because the black men's story wasn't being told. No one was hearing from them. They wasn't getting the interviews. Very few black men, and they formed a group called Black Boys at Dozier at that time to bring some attention to the plight of what took place on the segregated campus on the black side. So we didn't fear anything. I mean, these men had lived through the worst, and the worst thing that anyone could ever imagine in their wildest imagination. And so at this time in their lives, in their 60s and 70s, you know, they didn't want to go to the grave with this. They just had to tell somebody. And for the most part, hearing men say, who was going to believe me? I hear that all the time from people like Pastor Gaddy and other people who have suffered with the abuse, the injustice of slavery. I hear this all the time, so it wasn't nothing new. But we just was determined to go and hold the candlelight vigil and take these men back to the campus for the very first time after 50 years.
Amazing. Amazing. Context of white supremacy, Ms. Antoinette Harrell, Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy. Listeners, if you all have questions, I'd say particularly people if you're in the Florida area, but anyone, if you have questions, feel free to dial in the number 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you have a question. Pastor Gaddy, is it all right for me to ask how old you are, sir?
70. I'll be
71
this coming November 22nd.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. How old were you when you finally left Dozier for good? How old were you then?
16, if I'm not mistaken.
16 years old?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And when you left for good, did you try to tell, like, your parents or anybody else, friends, other relatives, once you got away from Doja, did you try to tell them what had happened to you, what you had seen?
No, everybody was so busy picking at me the way I was dressing people. Yes, sir, and no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. They must have really made a house nigger out of you. That was my family talking to me that way. My brother, they teased me because he said, man, what did they do to you? I said, I was trying to tell you guys, man, what happened. So I kind of hushed, and I got quiet about it. I had a cousin that I could share my story with. He was listening. And he's a man, I tried to tell him that he was telling the truth. Now they're crying now because the story's coming out.
Wow. How did it impact you even after you left Dozier? Did it impact your ability to sleep, or just did it cause you other problems, depression? Just how did it impact you even after you were away from Dozier?
Well, it did. I really went to the drugs and the alcohol, and probably pretty much I drank the liquor and I drank it straight, and I had a Peptid also, and I had hole in my stomach from drinking raw liquor, and I went in a coma from that, and I didn't really know how to love nobody, really, because I got two daughters, one 50 and one 40, and I adopted a son, and he's 26, and I didn't know how to tell them I loved them. I didn't. My wife always would tell me, tell your children you love them, hug them. I didn't know how to do that for the longest. But I eventually got to the place I tell them, my daughter live here. Every morning she leave, I tell her, have a blessed day, I love you. Because I never know, well, we'll see one another again. So I learned how to, with the grace of God coming into my life, I learned how to love. I refused to let that place destroy me. It took my educational mind, but I had a mind that I could always do work. I was a sanitation driver for 30 years, and I had to have a hard job. My job had to be hard, and I wouldn't let them destroy me.
You say you had to have a hard job. Why did you have to have a hard job?
I don't know. I ain't figured that out yet. It couldn't be inside. It had to be outside.
Hmm.
And it had to be very hard.
Hmm. Did you, as they, a lot of times when they'll talk about people, particularly if they have some sort of trauma in their childhood, they'll say, you know, you should try to get some therapy or some counseling to help you deal with all that. Did you ever think about getting any counseling or therapy to talk about what you have been through?
Who are we going to talk to that about?
Hmm.
See, one thing I noticed through the years of my life of going through that school and coming out of that school, Miss Arell about the only person that I would share my life with, my story with, because it was something about her. She was interested in what we was going through, but she's the only black person that was really concerned about what we was going through. They said, well, you brought it on yourself. You just bad boy. I was labeled as a bad boy. And I was trying all my life. I've been trying to figure out. All I hurt was myself. I studied when I was a kid and going to school. And I didn't like the children pick at me, so I didn't go to school. So So I was labeled as a bad boy, and I was trying to figure all my life out. I wonder why do people calling me a bad boy? And when I was on drugs, I never sold nobody no drug to try to hurt them. But I smoked all the drug that I can get, drunk all the liquor that I can get. I wasn't ever trying to hurt nobody, but I hurt it myself more. And I'm crying to this day, 70, and my daughter right here, she can witness. I sit here and watch a sad movie. I go to crying. My wife said, go get him a napkin, because you know he in there crying. And I'm trying to figure out, why do I cry so much? Why do I cry? And I see how these young ladies, their life being taken from them, from boys and men, molesting men. And I know how that feels. That's a terrible feeling. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. And I said, I just cry. Man, every time you pick up the news, somebody molesting, and they turn these people to loose. Like these women, they lying. They just lying on this boy because he got money. They lying that he shouldn't be doing this. And I'm just thinking, I was a boy taken away from my mama, never left home in my life, sitting there watching the Lone Ranger, and I'm a bad boy. And I wonder why the black people never took the time to hear what I had to say.
Astonishing, astonishing context of white supremacy. I had a question, but I just, number one, wanted to commend Miss Antoinette Harrell for caring and seeking out not just Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy, but she got quite a few of the victims, Richard Huntley and John Bonner, Arthur Huntley, quite a few of the victims, black children at the time. At Dozier to share and talk about their experience. But what was different with you, Ms. Harrell, that made you want to seek people like Pastor Gaddy out to hear what they had to say and to believe what they had to say?
Well, like I said earlier on in the show, I met hundreds of people that experienced atrocities such as involuntary servitude, pillage, or modern-day slavery. And so most people, like Pastor Gaddy, the first wanted to listen. And it really surprises me now, even to today, why people do not want to hear about what someone went through. I often hear people who talk about taking tours of plantations. They went on a plantation, they took a tour. But to actually take a tour and listen to someone that's a narrator to tell you about the history of the plantation, but to actually talk to people who actually lived it, lived on plantations. This Dozier Reform School was a plantation to me, which is a modern day plantation. And we are omitting these experiences. We should be documenting. We should be talking to Pastor Gaddy. Since Pastor Gaddy and I have been in contact with each other, there have been several men to die. And so these men are in their 70s. They're in their 80s. And so if we don't document the story and make it, the least I can do is listen. They went through the hell. But for me not to listen, it really, I felt like I would be hurting them more psychologically by not listening. And so I believe Pastor Gaddy, he had no one can make these things up. And if someone make these things up, you have to question their mind. But no one can imagine living this through this hell. I couldn't imagine that because my mind just doesn't go there. It just doesn't cross those boundaries of a evil, dark, some type of hellish conditions. It just doesn't go there. So I believe Pastor Gaddy, and I've always been the kind of a person that people like Pastor Gaddy, they will confide in me, one, because I open up and listen to. I believe them. based upon the research that I have done at the National Archives, State Archives, addicts, courthouse addicts, oral interviews, there was no way I can doubt. I just, all the evidence was pointing that this is real. That's what made me want to listen and do what I could to help Pastor Gaddy get his story out and tell people what happened to him.
Just based on your research, Ms. Sorrell, can you kind of put in context or at least give us your theory? When we just heard Pastor Gaddy, when he said that a lot of black people said, well, you brought this on yourself, or we don't believe that. Can you kind of put in context why that sort of response can be, not doesn't happen all the time, but it can be common, unfortunately, for black people, can just in the context of racism, white supremacy, and what black people have experienced?
Yeah, it's easy to dismiss it because you don't want to deal with that. You know, it's like, okay, what did you do? It's like a lady being raped and the person say, oh, well, what did you do to bring it on yourself? You wore that dress. You wore that short dress. You know, what did you do? And it's always easy to point the fingers at the victim, because that way you don't have any responsibility to seek justice. And so it's easy to point the fingers and say, well, you was a bad boy, you know, without really getting into it to see what really took place. Why was Johnny picked up and put in, this little boy picked up and just taken directly to Dozer and being told that I'm your daddy now? And so we don't want to study the history. We don't want to do the legwork. We don't want to be responsible for seeking justice. You know, we want to pretend that. And I always think about, there was two types of screams that was taking place in the Sunshine State of Florida. One, the screams of children enjoying themselves on a nice sunny day with the theme parks and rides and amusement, candy, you name it, they did it. And then there was the children that were screaming from abuse, like Pastor Gaddy. And no one wants to, when they go to Florida, people think about vacations. They're not thinking about kids like Pastor Gaddy. You know, to some people, he's a nobody. He's an officer. Who cares? We don't really care about that situation. He did something. It was easy to blame him, like in most cases. The victim is always blamed, and for the most part, it can push them further into a depression where they self-medicate themselves because they're trying to cover up the pain because nobody believed them. But I believe Pastor Gaddy since the very first day I heard him. And I won't stop until I can help him to get his story out there to everyone that we can reach.
Well said. Context of white supremacy. I did want to get a quick thought from you, Ms. Sorrell. There was a report in Forbes earlier this year. It's titled Bodies Found at Dozier's Boys School. Identified families may get compensation for proper funerals. And they kind of touch on the aspect of racism, white supremacy and all of this. They have a report. This is from the investigation that's ongoing into what happened at Dozier. And it reads, this research continues to underscore the significant impact and implications of plantation and chattel slavery, convict labor practices, and segregation as practiced in the U.S. This history and the practices of systemic racism, exclusion, and segregation permeated every aspect of life for all citizens. As a result, basic rights of citizenship, justice, freedom of movement, and accountability were denied to a large part of the population of the state of Florida, including the boys and their families at the Reform School. We see direct evidence of marginalization in custody through this example, such as the discrepancies among those who lived and died, which of the deaths were investigated or even reported to the state, who was issued death certificates, the biological markers of stress and poverty evident on the bones and teeth, a child wearing a polio brace, and the fact that 67% of those buried at the school were African American. These systemic practices of marginalization are further reflected in record keeping that lacked consistent standards, proper enforcement and oversight, because of unchecked institutional power and policies that considered certain lives as throwaway. Just your response to this part of the report.
I'm not surprised. And certainly the percentage of black boys that they found, I'm more surprised that the black media, black producers, who have the ability to produce major films that can make it to major networks, to help get this injustice brought to the forefront, because do I believe that there's other dozers that exist? Certainly I do. The lack of attention that came from the black community is this a part of Black Lives Matter? Yes, it is. Should we be looking at every angle of Black Lives Matter? Yes, we should. And so, once again, the bodies was found on the black side of campus. Some of these children was black. Yes, it was taking place at the same time that Trayvon Martin, the story of injustice, what happened to Trayvon. But this story here got pushed to the back burner. So once again, the many articles that you will find, and we thank you for reaching out with your radio talk show. And we hope that other people are listening and say, the least that we can do is allow the format for Pastor Gaddy to come on and to begin to talk about what took place in this reform school, who was in control, how did it happen, what was the justice that took place. I remember we were sitting in the governor's cabinet that day when it was the attorney general asking for more funding, Pam Bundy, more funding to further the investigation. And I remember we were sitting in the back, and I asked the black men, come, let's move to the front. And to recognize a man that was 82 years old, who was there, I think, in the 30s or 40s, somewhere like that. We owe it to people like Pastor Gaddy, if nothing else, but to allow them a way to tell their story.
Ashe, got disconnected. I'm just adding Pastor Gaddy back to the line. Looks like he got disconnected. Dialing him back really quick. And do see folks with calls. I'll get those in as well.
Hello?
Greetings, Pastor Gaddy. Sorry we got disconnected, but we have you back with us on the line. I do see people who have questions, so we'll get some of our calls in as well. I'll give out the number again. If you have a question for Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy and or Miss Antoinette Harrell, the number again, 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you have a question. Caller in New York. I think this is Thomas in New York. Did you have a question for Pastor Gaddy or Ms. Harrell?
Good evening, Doug. Good evening, Pastor Gaddy and Ms. Harrell.
Good evening.
Just wanted to say, man, your story is it's extremely important to hear, and it's also extremely sad, and I wish you didn't have to go through that. I have a feeling that, you know, down in Florida wasn't the only place that was happening. I had a question for you and Ms. Gaddy. One was for you, sir, was do you think that they might have put in the archives that you were there twice to maybe split your time there in half because they didn't have the right to keep you for 5 years straight, you know, so they might have said you were there for 2.5 years and another 2.5 years?
That's the conclusion I came up with. They probably did it that way. That's what I thought it was.
That's you know, they, you know, in the archives, I mean, just unbelievable. My question for Mr. Gaddy, I heard you talking about sometimes it's good to hear these stories, you know, and let the people tell the story, and we need to hear it. Do you think that
I think that's Miss Harrell you're talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Harrell, I'm sorry. I was saying the fact that you said it was so good for him to tell his story and you to believe him, and how it's good to tell these things. Do you think that the story of slavery, told from a black perspective, do you think that's important for black people to learn and really study? Because it seems like one of them things we put on the back burner.
Oh, by all means, we must tell it, listen and tell it from a black perspective, because then it's not something that is created from somebody else. You know, it's one thing for the oppressors to want to have done it, but now we got to go back to him and expect him to tell what happened. And so we need to have more avenues, to get these type of stories out. There's thousands and thousands of stories, but nobody want to talk about it because, one, who's going to listen? Who is going to listen? And to hear Pastor Gaddy talk about seeing the hands of children in the fire pit and swimming and working in the water with the alligators cutting down timber. I mean, it's our responsibility. You know, I can say this, it's football season. How many people are going to be tuned into the television to watch a game, a football game? How many people really want to learn what Pastor Gaddy is saying? Because there's a saying that say history has a way of repeating itself. Nobody want to talk about the strange fruit. Nobody want to listen to what Pastor Gaddy has to say. But after Pastor, you know, God forbid that anything happens, but this is life. Something happened to Pastor Gaddy. Everybody want to piece together the story then. Talk to him now. Listen to him now. Ask the questions. Use the connections to get him on other radio talk shows or television talk shows so that we can. Yes, I agree with you, Carla. I believe that there are other schools out there like Dozer Reform School.
Appreciate that, Thomas, in New York. Appreciate those questions. The caller at 2534, did you have a question for either Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy or Miss Antoinette Harrell?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Good evening. How you doing, Gus? Good evening to Pastor Gaddy and Mrs. Harrell. Kind of speechless hearing it. My mind is going back, but I just want to say I commend you, sir. I thank you for surviving and telling your story. I thank you, Ms. Harrell, for doing your work on this story and putting it out there. I wanted to ask, I'm not forgetting, I heard you say about, you know, it was hard for you to tell people, in particular your children, that, you know, you love them, you know what I mean? And you spoke about how it affected your ability to have relationships. I wanted to ask, maybe I missed it, maybe you spoke on it and I missed it, but I wanted to ask you, how did it affect you just having plutonic relationships with, or friendships with the opposite sex, with women? Were you able to, was it easy for you, or did it, you know, did it cause you some detriment? Or?
No, it didn't stop me from, well, I've been married with my wife now 50 years. So it really didn't affect me, and I really don't get turned on men. That's a turn off right there for me, because I was a child in the abusive way that it happened to me. I wouldn't put that on my worst enemy.
I know that's right. I actually know a couple of them that were in went well out of Bossier School, I guess around the time in the 70s. I'm in South Florida myself. I've been through the prison system a couple times, and everything is all the cycle. It's the same type of thing, same type of brutality and terrorism, the rapes, everything is the same. So when I read about it, when I hear you speak about it, it just brings back memories of it. Just sounds like the same thing. So I just wanted to ask you that because I did at first have problems with speaking to females, not even speaking to women, not trying to, take them out or anything like that, but just a platonic relationship, just speaking. Just I was kind of like, apprehensive, nervous. And I just wanted to ask you if it has that effect on you. And I thank you for your answer. And like I said, I thank you guys for all the work that you've done. And I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Yeah, you'll be all right.
Appreciate that as well, caller. Thank you for sharing. I think this is Roz. Roz, if you had a question either for Pastor Gaddy or Ms. Harrell, you should be with us, Roz.
Yes, greetings to you, Gus. Greetings to you, Pastor Gaddy and Mrs. Harrell. Pastor Gaddy, I have to say, listening to your story was just really, really hard to hear. Again, I would have to echo Thomas in New York sentiments. I'm really, really sorry you had to suffer through those sorts of things and for all the other black children that were put through that sort of horrific treatment. And thank you as well, Mrs. Harrell, for facilitating Pastor Gaddy's ability to tell his story, and I hope as many people as possible.
Muted.
Because it is extremely important. I wanted to ask something, actually to both of you. Would you say now that the nationwide homosexual agenda, and I would say global homosexual agenda, has gone mainstream, and white homosexual couples are now allowed to adopt black children, would you say that the system has refined itself to the point where they are now normalizing deviant behavior to the point where Pastor Gaddy, when he went through his situation, it was definitely behind closed doors, and it was something where the faculty were facilitating this deviant behavior and the brutalization of these children, whereas now it's more mainstream where you have people like Charlize Theron with her adopted child who she allows to wear dresses, and she's basically homosexualizing him at the age of 4, and then you have gay white males who are allowed to adopt black male children, which I believe is another form of abuse. Do you think that the system has refined itself to the point where they're normalizing pedophilia? So now they can be more overt with it, whereas in Pastor Gaddy's case, it was more covert.
Unmuted.
I think the whole thing in my own, that this is my own opinion. I saw the child dressed as a little girl, but now had it been, if this was a black couple with a little white child, it certainly would have been a case of child abuse. And certainly, in many cases, like Pastor Gaddy, where he was told not to say anything, the state is aware, very much aware that these children, these little boys, was being molested. So I think it is this appetite for children is a very scary one, because it was just recently that there was this senator who had a bill on the floor saying that it was okay. They want to pass a bill that a child can consent to sex at 10. I think it was 10 years old. And so we have to watch that whole demonic force there, because it has a very nasty appetite for children. And so Pastor Gaddy was forced to live this horrible thing. And it was this create something in him that wasn't in him. It wasn't him to be a woman. He died at a very early age, and he didn't do this to himself. It was done to him. It was done to him by adults. He had no choice. He was a child. Either be beaten or killed. And I'm so happy that Pastor Gaddy made it out of there. But Pastor Gaddy is just one of the people. And although he lived with this in the back of his mind at night, not telling anyone, because he hadn't told anyone. I remember his wife saying, Mrs. Gaddy saying that she kind of suspected, but she never said anything. So Pastor Gaddy lived with this, keeping this to himself, silent about this, up until about 3.5 years ago.
That answer your question, Roz?
Yes, absolutely. I just can't imagine what Pastor Gaddy must have suffered through, having to hold such horrible experiences in for so long, if he just started talking about it only 3 years ago. So I would just say, you know, much respect to you, and you're extremely brave, and I thank you for coming on today's show, sir.
All right, thank you, sir. A lot of tears.
Thank you for your question, Roz. If other folks have questions, please do not wait till the last minute. Get your hand up if you have a question that you want to get in. Pastor Gaddy, when I think a lot of the attention on the Dozier School started to come about in the last 5 years or so with the investigations, the school was closed down in 2011, and then they started with the investigations. Number one, has there been to you or to any of the other black victims, the black boys that were there, has there been any sort of formal apology from the state of Florida, any sort of compensation for all of the terrorism that you experienced as a child at Dozier?
Well, we got an apology from the governor, but no restitution. But as you were talking earlier about the boy body was there, give him money to bury the boy. Well, I just preached a boy funeral. He was one of the first bodies that that they sent back to his sister. It was in Daytona Beach, and she wanted me to come down and do the eulogy for him because I was one of the black boys. He was up there. His name was Billy Jack, and he was up there in 52, just a little bit before I got there. And I went to do his eulogy, and it was five generations of his family member was there, his sister, her daughter, and great-grand and great-grand. And the girl was, when I was talking, she went to crying. And I was asking why she's crying. She said because when you were talking about how they molested you, I thought about it. I was in the Army for 8 years and how the men molested me, and I was a soldier. She said, and you hit a nerve.
Wow. Widespread sexual abuse, that is a key component in the system of racism, white supremacy. I think Ms. Harrell, she touched on it earlier in the broadcast today, that when a lot of the attention first started to be focused on the Dozier Reform School, that it was focused on white children who were there and their experience. How have you been treated by the white children who were at Dozier? Have they been receptive to you? Have they wanted to include you in different things that have happened to draw attention to what's taking place in Marianna, Florida?
Yes, some much, you know, because they can only go so far because the bodies they're finding is on a black side. And so far, I've been the only black guy representing the black side. I've been up to the governor's office a couple of times and went to Marianna two or three times, and I'm the only black guy that's standing up. The rest of them, I don't know. Some of the guys don't really get involved with it. But they told us, we got there as a little boy. They always remember this. They told me they was preparing me for prison. And that still stick with me to this day. I didn't have to go to prison. But I thank Ms. Arell for helping me write this book because I've been in the libraries and talked about it more lately than I ever talked. I've been given calls from the college to come talk about it. And I don't know why it's moving so fast this year, but it's moving pretty good. People want to hear the story. And the book I got, if anyone interested in it, is paper, is email. You can get it through email, PayPal, email Gaddy1945@gmail.com, and the speed of $15 plus $3 shipping and handling.
The email, Gaddy1945@gmail.com.
Right.
Right on. Gaddy1945@gmail.com. If you want to get a copy of the book, They Told Me Not to Tell Dozier Reform School Was a Living Hell. Johnny Lee Gaddy, and co-authored with the help of Miss Antoinette Harrell. If this was going to be resolved, like if, you know, if the governor came to you right now, or whomever in authority in the state of Florida came to you and said, Pastor Gaddy, what would you like to see happen? What would be the best way we can resolve this for you and the other victims, the families of the victims of the Dozier School? And they said, just tell us what you think would be the best way to resolve this whole situation and try to do right by everybody. What would you like to see happen?
Give me a truck and boat with 150 horsepower where I can go fishing.
Boat with 150 horsepower to go fishing and a truck.
That's it.
That's it. Wow. Wow. That does not seem like very much. I don't think that would be asking too much given everything that you all went through, a truck and a boat. That seems pretty petty. I think they could do that if they wanted to, if they were about justice in this whole situation. Ms. Harrell, with the whole investigation that they have that's ongoing, I think they're still doing some digging and investigating and what have you with what's taking place down in Dozier. I think the lead anthropologist in all this, Erin Kimmerly, she's a white woman. Have they reached out to you since you've been so integrally involved in all of this? Have they contacted you to help them get more information?
No, not really. I think she's been doing the research from the under the university. I came in as a finished researcher to document the involuntary servitude, to trace the money, to look at what type of produce, how the long hours they worked, who they was working for. So that's, you know, I guess the evidence is still coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still, I have enough information now to do another book, especially when Pastor Gaddy talked about the Dr. Susie Soup. And so I did a lot of research on that just to see what kind of experiment they was doing on these boys. And so, but they, to answer your question, no, they have not.
Wow.
And I'm not surprised as well.
Unfortunately, I am not surprised either about all of that. Do you, in terms of just, it's kind of the same question that I asked Pastor Gaddy in terms of if someone came to you and said, hey, you've researched all this, Ms. Harrell, in your view, what the state of Florida, what should they do to make this situation for right for Pastor Gaddy and the other victims of the Dozier School? What should they be doing?
Well, first of all, there certainly should be a monetary restitution for the pain and suffering that these men have went through. And, of course, there's no amount of money can rectify what they went through, but it certainly would be helpful if there was a lawsuit that was brought against the state, because, after all, these boys was property of the state, no matter how they look at it. So if they can't bring the charges against per se a person, but they were still property of the state, wards of the state. So the state of Florida should be responsible. So I think these pain and suffering should be paid in a monetary fees there. And I think there should be a foundation set up for the families, for the children of these people who went through this. And certainly with Pastor Gaddy saying that he didn't know how to tell his children he loved them, some of these men did not know how to have relationships. So on top of that, there should be some counseling for those that is still living and survive. There should be some counseling for them as well. And as well as their families, because I heard some of the men's families talked about how they was abused by their husbands. I mean, they would come in there and beat them and, you know, abuse them because that's all the men knew. So certainly I'm going to say, yes, they should pay these men for the pain and suffering, but I also like to see a foundation and also see to it that the Department of Justice and on the state and the federal level have a direct way of these type of things being reported when it happens from the state-ran schools like that, you know, especially when there's children that is ward of the state. Who can they tell? Who can they trust? They can't tell people that's in charge of, because they're the ones who are abusing them. If not, they know about it, but they're not going to say anything about it because they're going to be too fearful of losing their jobs.
And just when Pastor Gaddy says, you know, just a truck and a boat so he can go fishing, that, you know, would be enough.
That's what makes him happy. if that's what makes him happy, because we got to understand, a boat, when he's out there on that water, that's therapeutic for him. Is very therapeutic. And that may be the one thing that has helped him to cope all of these years. Like you said, at one time he was a drinker. He stopped drinking, so he took it to the water. And I can attest to that, because sometimes I go fishing myself, and I know when I'm just at the end of my wits, because there's another angle to this. After I done all the research, I don't have anybody to tell it to either. So I understand Pastor Gaddy. So I have to take to my garden, and I have to go in my garden and work. Why? Because that's the I let it out. I let it out because nobody want to hear what I'm talking about, slavery. Nobody want to hear that. So I understand Pastor Gaddy, maybe because maybe we bond over this, because I can talk to Pastor Gaddy and he can talk to me, and we listen to each other and we believe each other and we can bounce back and forth off each other. I've been pushed under the table by people not wanting to talk about this.
Sounds very familiar. Many of our listeners, when they say that they want to research racism, white supremacy in different eras, slavery, or things that are happening now, and people tell them they don't want to talk about that, that's depressing, let's talk about something else, they don't want to hear about all that. I have heard that frequently. I've been told that myself, unfortunately. Just giving folks an idea, because I don't really think that would be out of the realm. Like, I think financially Florida could probably knock that out pretty easily. So if Pastor Gaddy wants a truck and a boat, okay, fine, we'll knock that out, set up some counseling and whatever. They could probably do that easily. Just putting that in context of the amount of money that the state of Florida made from these black children at the Dozier School from 1900 to 2011. Just can you give an idea of the scale of what was going on in terms of the amount of production, crops, lumber that was being put, milk that was being produced at the Dozier School that went on for so long?
Oh, yeah. Every quarter there was financial reports that was being written up for the produce that was being sold at the time, on the milk that was being sold. And, you know, if you get something like $15,000, $25,000, well, that was a lot of money per quarter. Now, we're not talking about the year, we're talking about a quarter. So they were selling food and with the produce to, they were selling it to local stores and trucks was coming in and to pick up everything, and there wasn't, you know, and it was documented. So, yeah, that was another part of that was in the book in, I think it was in Black Boys at Dozier. Part of the chapter that I put in there was the reports, the financial reports of how much money they was making quarterly off the livestock, the produce, and the timber.
Wow. Wow. And Pastor Getty, I also wanted to make sure I got this in as well, because you touched on it. You said that they were preparing you and the other black children that were there, they were preparing you all to go to prison. You were saying that the white children, that they got better education, they were learning skills. It seems some of the white children that were there, they were even working with Dr. Souza doing experiments on black boys at this time. You said when you got there, you really couldn't read when you got there, 1957, being 11 years old. By the time you left at 16, could you read at that point? Had they at least taught you that much in the 5 years that you were there?
No.
Wow.
I still have a problem reading to this day.
Mm.
I don't know where I can look at it. I can pretty much make what it's saying, but I can't put it on paper.
Wow. You included the book. They taught you how to use a tractor and, you know, all these other skills in terms of farm labor and draining a swamp and cutting down these trees, and even giving you all information on how to chop down a really big tree so that nobody gets killed. It doesn't fall on anybody. You can, you know, put a wedge in it so that you can control where the tree is going to fall to keep everybody safe. But they can't stop and take time to teach an 11-year-old child, black child, how to read. That is profound. That, in my opinion, that is right there. This is deliberate. We have every intention. There's no rehabilitation or reform going on here at all. This is just going to be continuing our system of enslaving black people from childhood, really, until the grave. Once they leave here, we'll have a nice jail cell waiting for them, and they can just continue to do slave labor while we have them locked in a prison someplace in the state of Florida or wherever else this is going to be replicated. I didn't see any other questions, so if folks have a question, you should get your hand up immediately if you have another question that you want to make sure you get in to ask Pastor Getty, Ms. Harrell. Ms. Harrell, anything that you think our listeners just should know about this work? And you said you even have enough material for another book. If you want to tell us when we can kind of look for, expect the other book to come out as well. But anything?
Yeah, I will look at the early spring of 2017. I'll be at that time ready. You know, because sometimes when you don't receive the therapeutic sessions for the work that you do, I have to back off sometime because it's a little bit too much, and I have to step away from it. And then once I step away from it, and I'll get a phone call from Pastor Getty about something, and we'll pick it up again. And like he said, it's been moving very well this year. But there's times we can go months and months and no one talk about it. It could go a year and no one talk about it. So I'm very happy to hear that, you know, he's getting calls for a new documentary. So there's some new things that's being worked on, and we hope that eventually that there's a movie deal that can come out of this work for Pastor Getty in his lifetime. Because so often people pass away, and after they pass away, then people, you know, they talk about it. They talk about the work. But I would like to see this happen in Pastor Getty's lifetime.
Amen. Amen. Pastor Getty, anything that you would like to make sure our listeners know, or anything you want to make sure you share with our listening audience?
Yeah, one thing I'm very concerned about. You know, I talked to my wife and my daughter because the story that I'm putting out is very dangerous here in Florida because these people don't want to hear this. And because I was in a book signing and this guy got pretty outraged, not that I was fearful of him. He just started calling me a liar, and the lady had to put him out the library and say, "Ain't y'all nigga deserve that?" And she had to put him out the library. And so sometimes they get pretty irate. And I'm living in a race in a Klan area that I know. And I was telling her, I said, I live in Hernandez County, which is Brooksville, Florida. And I said, I'm very observant of my surroundings. And I said, y'all don't have 60 black employed in this whole town. And they were trying to count 60 black people employed in this town. They couldn't get them. I mean, I know. I said, I told you, very preserving of my surroundings. When I go in a store and I'm looking at two blacks in Walmart, the biggest Walmart is, you got two blacks in the whole store, night and day shift. And that's what kind of area I live in. So they really don't want to hear nothing about no slavery. Because like I was telling well, and when we was up there, we had all the cameras on us, and the camera lady from New York asked me, said, "Pastor Gaddy, say, did you see it? You see any change?" I said, "No, ma'am." She said, "What you mean?" I said, "It's still the same. You talk to the white people, don't talk to the black people." But see, the only reason I'm getting noticed now because the white man don't have no story to tell. He can't tell the black story. Ms. Arell always told it. It was two sides, so I couldn't tell your story. You can't tell mine. But they invite me to these places, not that they want me there, but they don't want me to tell a story. But the story's getting out. As long as they can get something out of where I'm at, they got to have a black person stand in.
Wow. What I wanted to make sure I got in as well, just how helpful has your daughter, Katina, how helpful has she been in helping you get information and going through the archives and what have you?
Ever since I started, she's my next secretary. She's my next mama. Yeah, she's educated. So well, I'm slack at, she's highly into it. So she helps me out a lot with the computer and the telephone and the book signing. She's right there for me.
Right on. Appreciate that, man. The book, again, folks want to check it out. And again, you can drop an email, Gaddy1945@gmail.com. Gaddy1945@gmail.com. The book, They Told Me Not to Tell, Dozier Reform School Was a Living Hell. Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy, with assistance co-author Miss Antoinette Harrell, and you can also Miss Harrell, her book Days of Horror at Dozier, Rapes, Murders, Beatings, and Slavery. And she has some of the other victims as well. In addition to Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy, we have Arthur Huntley, Richard Huntley, John Bonner as well, to give some of their experiences at the Dozier Reform School. Really a pleasure. I mean, gruesome to listen and go through some of the details, but extremely important in my opinion. I definitely hope that there's just more attention, if y'all can get a movie, a documentary, just more information to really highlight what the black boys at Dozier, what their experience was, so that more people have a much better understanding of this sort of thing. And as Miss Harrell said, important to know this, because this sort of thing could happen again with black children just being abused, taken advantage of in all shape, form, fashion. Why we should be extremely motivated to end the system of white supremacy immediately. But just thanks to the both of you for being so generous with your time this Wednesday evening, and anything that we can do to help you all's efforts to get more attention out about what the work that you all are doing, just let us know. And I know we have a lot of listeners down in the Florida area, so they would want to pitch in and help as well. So just keep us abreast of what you all are up to, and just again, thank you. you so much for the work that you've done and taking time out to come speak with us this evening.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Good night.
Have a great evening, Miss Orell. Pastor Gaddy, take excellent care of yourself, and thank you again, sir, for coming to speak with us.
By all means.
Take excellent care. We'll speak with both of you soon. Good evening. Context of white supremacy. Wow. Painful information, but extremely important. As I said, I can empathize with Miss Harrell. And I think she said that when she was on with us earlier this month, when she stated that sometimes she just has to take a break from talking about this, from doing interviews and going out and speaking and what have you, just because it can be depressing. Just, you know, going over these stories of black children being brutalized and raped, and people don't believe them, and killed, and having their remains fed to hogs. I mean, it can really bother you mentally, spiritually, and you sometimes just need to have some respite from going through that and talking about it or what have you, because it certainly does have an impact on you. But just in my view, extremely important that sort of thing doesn't get forgotten, omitted when we talk about history. That's the sort of thing that, as I stated at the beginning of the program, this is one of the ways that we can counter racism, just to make sure that we're informed about this sort of thing. In particular, as I said, state history, local history, wherever you happen to be in your particular area, you should be really well informed about things that have happened with regards to racism, things that have happened to black people, just things that have happened in your geographic location specifically. Be well versed, because that sort of thing just gets omitted, and or they will end up having whites who become the quote unquote experts on all of that. And so they'll be the ones they get to come out and speak and talk about what happened. And there'll be no black representation when it's time to talk about those events. And of course, it's not going to be told correctly. They're not going to use correct terms. They're probably just going to be inaccurate in giving a report about what happened. Even that report at Forbes, where they continue to use the word marginalized, I have no idea what that means. I thought margins were on a piece of paper. I mean, I'm kind of, you know, joking, but not really. In my view, that's exactly how racism, white supremacy is practiced. I didn't hear the word white supremacy in that paragraph that they read, that they quoted in that Forbes report. I didn't hear the word white supremacy. I heard the word racism, I think, once, but they just use a lot of language to deliberately, in my view, to obfuscate, to not be as clear. And this is terrorism. We don't want to be using euphemisms to say, well, this was discrimination or marginalization. No, this was terrorism. This was barbarism, state-sanctioned barbarism. Let's use the most accurate words possible to describe the gravity. I mean, if we're talking about systemically 11-year-olds being raped and sodomized, where the staff knew about this and nobody said anything, nobody did anything, this was just allowed to go on for decades with impunity, well, then we should use words, we should use terms that convey that accurately. I certainly see white people have no problem when they want to talk about what a savage Bill Cosby is. They have no problem going to town, and we're not going to be euphemistic. We're going to make this sound as bad as possible. No problem. We talk about Nate Parker, who has been convicted of nothing. We have no problem using the most graphic language possible. We should do the same thing when we're talking about particularly systemic. We're not talking about one victim. We're talking about decades upon decades. Really, this school was in operation for more than a century, so more than 100 years of abuse of black children. Certainly, you should be able to employ the exact same English language skills to be as graphic and as accurate as possible in detailing this story. But again, that's just one of the ways that we can counter racism. Be informed wherever you happen to live at. I'm sure there is some history of racism, white supremacy, and things black people have done, terrorism that has been waged against black people specifically. Be knowledgeable about that sort of thing. And again, that's one of the ways that you can help teach your children, educate your children about racism, white supremacy. You can be taken tours. You can take your children, go to the Dozier School if you live in Florida. Go if you find out Pastor Gaddy is going to be giving a talk at one of the libraries or one of the local colleges, campuses, what have you. Take your children and go. Have a question or two that's prepared. Your children can write a little paragraph, you know, or one page, depending on how old they are. They can write a paragraph or a one-page report to just show what they've learned. They check out some information. They can go online, read a couple articles, maybe listen to an interview that he's done and get some information. That way they can be more informed. I think that's one of the ways that you can make it real, that you're not just talking about something in abstract or, you know, to really help your children grasp that this is something that is an authentic problem. It is a problem right now, and that racism, white supremacy is something that happens to real black people, real living black people that are walking around you, that are alive today, that have experienced and been victimized by racism, white supremacy. I think that's something that can have a big impact. So certainly take advantage. We were able to get, I believe, get the situation resolved. I know we were having some difficulties with the server upgrade for people listening at Black Talk Radio Network. We were having some difficulties for the weekend program, but I think we got that corrected. I was able to listen in on the program, and it seemed to be streaming. So for folks who did not want to call in, you should have been able to just listen at Black Talk Radio today with no problems. I didn't get any emails from folks saying that they were having problems or difficulties listening to the program. So I think we got that part of it resolved. The tune-in aspect, thanks to all the folks who emailed, Mr. Scotty Reed and quite a few other folks emailed tune-in to ask that they update our server. Again, I emailed them the update last week. It's been a week since I emailed them the updated stream, and I sent it to them again yesterday. So they've got it twice, and I think at least Mr. Reed, in the letter that he sent to them, he also included the stream. So they have the updated information. They're just lollygagging. Could be the practice of racism, white supremacy right there in not updating the stream at TuneIn. For any of our folks who listened to the live program and or listened to archive content at TuneIn, hopefully they will get on their job and update the stream post-haste. I'm also going to see if we can get our stream submitted to iTunes, so that way people will be able to listen at iTunes, and hopefully TuneIn will get on the job so they can people can listen there, as well as Black Talk Radio Network, just to give people an array of options where they can access the content. But I will give an update. We'll be here tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday, so hopefully sometime over the next few days, the updates will take place and folks will have more listening options where they can access the context of white supremacy live and archived content. As I just stated, we'll be here tomorrow. Workplace racism. Looking forward to exchanging views, hearing updates. Some people already sent some emails. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. That is Thursday evening. Of course, we'll be here on Friday. We are closing in on the conclusion of Blood Brothers, the fatal friendship between Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X. That is same program time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, and Saturday will be here. Compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on what has gone down over the past 7 days. Quickly, before I check in, folks who dialed in, if you'll have any content, any comments, observations you'd like to share before we wrap things up. I had stated, I think a while ago, probably last month, I had stated that I did want to see reading is way more important than watching television, movies, any of that. Reading is way more important, reading and writing. These are two of the books that I was able to read for August, Days, Dark Days of Horror at Dozier, Rapes, Murders, and Beatings. That's Antoinette Harrell. And then They Told Me Not to Tell, Dozier Reform School Was a Living Hell, two of the books that I read during the month of August. I did watch, was able to see the latest installment in the Jason Bourne series. It's books and films. I should read one of those books, probably. I didn't even know that it was that whole film series was based on books that have already been written until later down the road. But anyway, I was able to see the most recent one, and I had stated, and this didn't come to me until recently, that I think that film series reveals a lot about white identity. If you watch the first one, I'm not encouraging that you have to watch the whole thing. Just I saw these films before I was more informed about racism, white supremacy. The first one, I think, came out in 2002, so it's been almost 15 years. But the first one, Jason Bourne, played by Matt Damon, white killer, trained white killer. He's going to kill a black, quote unquote, leader of a country on the continent. He's going to kill him, and not just kill him, he's going to kill him in a manner where they can blame it on other black people. And they state this specifically in the film. That is the whole goal of sending Jason Bourne, this white killer, kill this black leader, and we can do it so we can blame it on some other black people. He goes to kill this black leader, black male, but the black male has his daughter in his hands when he's going to blow his brains out, and Jason Bourne can't do it. Now, obviously, I have not seen this to be the case for whites. They have no problems, difficulties killing black people at all. You can see the news report just from this week in Ohio where some white psychopath, he ran a red light and hit a black mother of three children, hit her car, got out of his vehicle. They both survived the crash. This white beast got out of his vehicle and then proceeded to shoot and kill this black mother. He shot her repeatedly, gunned her down in the street and killed her after the accident. Thankfully, her children, I mean, if that's even a thankfully, her children are not in the car. But I mean, he shot and killed this black mother of three children. He's in jail right now and facing murder. I mean, that is white psychopathology. But I have not seen where they have any difficulties, any problems, any qualms about killing black people, black children, particularly given what we just heard from Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy. But Jason Bourne, he's unable to kill this black leader because he's got his young child in his arms. So he scurries away. And he gets amnesia. He cannot remember who he is. He totally loses his identity. And I said, I think this film, it is representative of this is what it means to be white. You are supposed to have total disregard for black life. You are directly, indirectly engaged in abusing and or killing black people worldwide, dominating, abusing, killing, terrorizing black people worldwide. That is white identity. I think this film makes it very clear. And once he's not able to kill this black person, he has totally lost his identity. It's like, what am I doing? What is my purpose for even being on the planet? Who am I? I don't know. I don't know anything. I'm totally lost in a world where I am not able to practice racism, terrorize, abuse black people. I don't even know who I am anymore. That is white identity. And they crystallized it in the most recent one. They have a scene. I have to take a screenshot. I just saw the film this morning. But they have a scene where they are looking at Jason Bourne's file and they do a psych evaluation on him after he's got amnesia and all that. And they say that we think that Jason Bourne, we think he has totally lost his identity. We think, in fact, since he has got amnesia and he's not with the agency anymore and all that, he's not going out and killing black people. We think, in fact, he will have completely lost his purpose for existence. They say this. They have a frame where they show the psychological evaluation and they blow this up on the screen so you can read the report. And that's what it says. I said, I got to get a screenshot of that so that I can post that and write something about that, because that's exactly what I stated. That is making it very clear, in my view, what it means to be white. If you're not going to practice racism, if you're not going to abuse and terrorize black people, participate in keeping the Dozier School rolling for more than a century and raping black children, beating black children, using them for slave labor, killing black parents out in the street, gunning them down in the middle of the road, going to black churches and gunning them down, whatever, however you participate, whatever your form of racism, white supremacy is, if you're not going to do that, what is your purpose for even being on earth? You don't have a purpose. That's what we're supposed to be here for. If you're not going to do that, why are you even here? Who are you? In my view, that is exactly what it means to be white. And if you're not going to do that, we're going to just treat you like the niggers. If you're not going to go along with practicing racism, white supremacy, then get over there with the niggers and we'll abuse you too. That seems to be what it's conveying. And I see a lot of evidence that that seems to be the way the system of white supremacy operates. I could be in error. And again, I'm certainly not encouraging folks to sit around and, you know, feel like you have to watch any of these flicks. Reading is more important than watching television. I learned a lot more by reading Antoinette Harrell's work, Pastor John Lee Gaddy's work, than watching any of the Jason Bourne flicks. Just pointing that out because I'm sure some people have probably seen some of those films over the years. I, like I said, had seen some of them myself. Folks have any observations about what they heard from the Dozier School, Miss Antoinette Harrell, Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy? If you have any observations or comments you want to make sure you get in before we wrap things up, feel free. Should be with us, Thomas in New York. The caller is 2534. Roz, if you all had any comments or observations you want to get in about what you heard from our guests for the evening, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, this was just really, I must say, it was one of the most difficult things to listen to. But I think that the necessity for this can't be understated. I think we need to know the worst of what has been done to us so that we never get it in our minds that there's anything white people are not capable of. And I think the more we hear about these things, as painful as they can be, it'll help to keep us on point in regards to how we view and deal with white people and how we understand how they function so that we never let our guard down and we can better protect ourselves from the anthropomorphic cancer that white people really are. His story really reminds me of the African proverb that says, until the lion can tell his own story, the hunt will always be told in favor of the hunter. And this, to me, is that Professor Gaddy's story is the equivalent of the lion telling his side of the story and what it's like to be hunted by a white man and to be abused and mistreated by a white person. So it's just very, very powerful discussion. And I wanted to ask you, Gus, how do you get through asking these sorts of hard questions? Because I know it must be somewhat uncomfortable just having to hear that stuff like we have to hear it, but then just coming up with questions in a way that it's respectful of the person and what they've been through and their feelings and still maintaining that journalistic integrity. Like, how do you do that? Because I found that to be very profound. So I just wanted to ask you about that. Thank you.
Just trying to have respect for the person, just realizing, I think that it, just as he said, I think both of them, but particularly Pastor Gaddy, as he stated, you know, having black people, he has in the book that, you know, he came back and he tried to tell his family members and they didn't believe him. He said that on the program today, that people didn't believe him or they didn't want to talk about it or just any old excuse. They blamed him for it. You know, you must have done something to deserve this. You were a bad boy. You messed up in the first place to put yourself in that position. So, you know, you deserve what you got type of an attitude. And I mean, that's very, very common for black people in the system of white supremacy, just not being listened to, people not having regard for what you have to say, your thoughts, your views. So just really trying to be, for me, trying to be professional and have the highest regard for black people's experiences, just recognizing the importance of what these people have to say, what they experienced, and making sure that we have a record that will benefit other people. If somebody that's trying to figure out to learn about the Dozier School or any of the other incidents that we have studied, people that we've interviewed or incidents that we have reported on, just trying to do something that's serious. I think Dr. Kanban says that all the time, the importance of being serious. I know Mr. Fuller talks about that all the time, the importance of being serious. Just trying to be serious for the gravity of the work and just trying to get as much information as possible so if people invest their time to listen to the program, they can learn as much as possible about these type of things that have happened. And certainly for any of the people that come on the program, Pastor Gaddy, Ms. Harrell, any of the other guests that we've had, to be serious and respectful of their time and their experience. For everything that Pastor Gaddy went through, I think that deserves the highest possible respect and seriousness in engaging with the content and just trying to get as much information as he's willing to share so that folks can get a better understanding of what racism is, how it works, and the type of things that can be expected to happen. It shouldn't be as shocking and grotesque as everything that he shared that happened to him personally and things that he observed, seeing black bodies in a hog pit where they're feeding them to a pig, and everything else that he documented, routine rape of black children. As nauseating and heinous as all of that is standard operating procedure, and that cannot be overstated. That is routine. That's what you can expect to happen. That is probably happening right now in some way, shape, form, all over the world in the system of racism, white supremacy. That is what it is designed to produce. So just having that in the forefront of my mind to make the broadcast, hopefully convey that as effectively as possible, that this is what you can expect until we figure out a way of putting whites out of business, if that's clear.
Yes, I must say thank you very much, and just big up to you for Black Self-Respect. Thank you for having them on the show. And when you brought up the situation of them feeding these babies, these children, to hogs, it made me think, because Florida is the home of gator bait, and it made me think of gator bait all over again. So, wow. But just thank you for having this program, and again, thank you for the work that you're doing, because I know it's not easy to have to ask those kind of questions to people who suffer through such brutality. So thanks again. I appreciate you.
For sure. Thank you kindly for the book as well. Ross helped us get this one rolling, getting us a copy of Pastor Gaddy's book, which was, not pleasant reading, but definitely informative. Glad we were able to get the program on.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all. This was a tough one. And it's strange, you know, because, being that it's around, the same ever. I was talking to Roz last night, and I was telling him I had just recently saw Mississippi Burning, and it's the first time I saw it, you know, where I was more aware. You know, I hadn't seen it since I was a kid. And I was telling him, you know, as a reference to the book we're reading on Friday, you know, man, I don't know what Malcolm X was thinking about, you know, calling the people down there cowards, man. It was really, they really had it bad, and man, he hit it home. I mean, like, that prison situation, I mean, they took him away from his mother. Like, she didn't even see him. Going for 5 years. Just didn't even learn how to read. Working in the water with alligators. Like, just, man, and that was in 1956. I'm thinking my mother was born in 1956. So this wasn't that long ago. I mean, on the broader scale of things, this was pretty recent. And man, I mean, it's tough for people. If you're white and you say you're ignorant, I can't agree with you. But especially if you come from the South, oh no. No way, impossible. That story about that lady, man, when I read that this afternoon, I just really was like, I could believe it, but it was just so unbelievable. And I just, man, I don't know if that guy knew her and he was deliberately going to kill her. It doesn't seem that way. That's just how the system works, man. And I think I said on the show, man, as long as they have this war with ISIS, they're at war with black women, and it's been picked up over the last few years. I can't even remember this many things happening to women, getting killed, getting raped, whole school, you know, I mean, just getting killed in that church last year. I mean, just an outward, like, war on the black women. You know, it's always a war on the black men, but it's really picked up on the women. And I think this is just a random act, that's going to really show that, it's something psychologically in them right now that they want to attack that black woman. But back to the book, just the guests overall, and I really love the lady. I liked her when she came on the first time and told the story. But hearing that man tell that story, that was very difficult. But at the same time, I felt like a sense of, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but it was like, I know I need it. You know, it's like looking at something that you don't want to see, but you keep your eyes open and you kind of cover your face, but you look at it with one eye. It was like that, listening to it. I was cringing, you know, and I'll mute my line for now. Thank you, Gus. Oh, Gus, did you get the email I sent you with a link to a podcast?
The one about the 60, I think it was the 68 Not 68, 64. 64 election with Lyndon Johnson.
Did you get a chance to listen to that?
I haven't had a chance to listen to the podcast, but yes, I did get it.
Oh, okay, okay, man. I think that was pretty compelling because we always say look at the patterns, and there's definitely one there in what's happening now. And I just wanted to know if you heard that sound bite because I was like, oh, Gus got to add this one, man. Niggerism. It was a commercial from 1964. I mean, it came on the television. Are you sick of niggerism, Catholicism? I mean, unbelievable. I mean, my mom, thank you.
For sure. I'm going to check it out, though. As soon as I nab myself a free moment, I will check it out and include that in my sound bank collection, sound clip collection. Miss anybody, any folks, any other folks have comments or questions they want to make sure they get in?
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Good evening, Gus. As I was saying before, the thing that made this so hard to listen to, but I made myself listen to it. I didn't really read any of the book. Just seen a couple of excerpts. But like I was saying before, I know personally a couple of guys that were in the school and were mistreated in this way, and I ended up being one of their victims. You know what I mean? When they got out, for whatever, everything that happened to them in there, they just came home and transferred it to whoever was under them. And I happened to be in a situation where I was a younger person in the house. So to know now the knowledge that that's the school that they went to, that these atrocities went on in the school, is like, I'm not upset with them anymore. I don't have any ill feelings towards them anymore because they were victims. And I honestly don't believe that, you know, the things that happened to them, that they wouldn't have turned out to be who they, you know, they wouldn't turn out to be victimizers. They wouldn't turn out to be, you know, perpetuators of this system or essentially of terrorism. So it was just, it was hard to hear that and to just, I don't know. And like I said, hearing him speak, and like I say, seeing some of the, because they ran a special down here on, I want to say Channel 7, they ran a special about it, and one part of the special, they were saying they couldn't find any bodies in the grave, and they turned around and said they could, and it was just a whole bunch behind that, but to hear that could have been stopped if it was a push for justice, or it could have happened, that could have stopped back then, and so many boys that got abused and victimized, the ones that made it through and they got out, and they turned out to be victimizers themselves, like that whole thing would have never happened. And then to see that they just shifted it into prison, the reform school, prisons, correctional institutions, jail, all of down here, all of it's the same. Hearing that and reading that, it's all run the same, and it was just hard. But I thank him, and I thank Ms. Arell for their contributions, and I thank you too as well, Gus, because I think Ross was saying that, you know, to be able to ask those questions, you have to have a steel reserve to be able to deal with this every day. So big up to you, Gus, and I'll mute my line. Thank you.
For sure. Thank you for sharing as well, because I think that when Mr. Fuller, when he says that's what the system of white supremacy is designed to produce, monsters and monstrosities, that's it exactly. And I think Ms. Harrell, she touched on it before. I think Pastor Gaddy, he shared about that today and saying that, you know, he was being beaten by other black people as well. The folks that were doing this molesting and raping, that these were black people, that they had black people, that older black people, not quote-unquote adults, older black males that were overseeing, if you want to use that term, overseeing them while they were working in the swamps with the alligators and snakes and doing all this slave labor. that's what the system produces. When you have been abused, raped, mauled spiritually, physically, and this just goes on for generations. This happened to you and your parents and grandparents, and it's just gone on for years and years and years. That just becomes normalized behavior. That, oh yes, mistreat other black people. That's what they're here for. Just mistreat other black people. I've been mistreated. I don't have any value for black life. I don't have any value for myself. So, you know, whatever. That's just what I do. I just go out and I participate in this too. And, you know, I can feel a little bit better. I can exert some form of power, of domination over other black people. And whites have written books about this. And this specifically, what sexual terrorism does, where you can sexually terrorize somebody, how that can affect them long term for the rest of their life. A lot of people, they never recover from that sort of abuse. But specifically with Pennsylvania, because we talked about this is in medical apartheid. We talked about this with Acres of Skin as well. We had Mr. Hornblum on the program. We talked about his book, Acres of Skin, as well as Sentenced to Science, which is the same thing. We had black males in greater confinement. These were, quote unquote, adults, not children. But they were being sexually abused and raped, many of them by other black people. But whites were in charge, and they were allowing this to happen, knowingly allowing this to happen. And even some one of our guests that was on the program, one of the victims, he was saying that they were engaged in this directly themselves. But it's the same sort of thing. They have done studies, written books about this sort of thing, and saying that in that sort of environment where you have got rampant terrorism, rampant abuse, rape, that a lot of people, they feel, the only way that I can exert any sort of manhood, put that in quotes, any sort of power, is by abusing another male. And, you know, I'm more manly than you are, because I can, you know, abuse you, I can rape you, I can dominate you sexually. So at least I'm more of a man than you. They know that this sort of thing is going to happen. They have studied psychology. They know human behavior patterns. When you have people in a situation where they're being dominated and mistreated, the type of predictable ways that people respond to being abused, particularly to being sexually abused. But they have studied all that. As Dr. Cambon said, we have systemic terrorists. They're not ignorant, scientific terrorists. In fact, that's the way that we should think about all of this. And they've been doing this for a long time. As Minister Malcolm said, they're experts. They have been abusing black people for a very, very long time. They know the psychology about how abuse works on the human brain, the human mind, human behavior behind all of that. So certainly, I would just point that out in terms of just those, how we end up repeating, recycling that abuse on other black people. Very, very common. We did have a person that wrote in, I guess they had a couple, I don't know how you, comments, observations, questions. See, one of their first questions slash observations, do you think the reason why black people don't listen to another individual when he or she submits to other non-white victims about their mistreatment, particularly by whites, is a part of how we have been conditioned, socialized to not have empathy for each other? Pastor Gaddy said they name-called him. He did. I thought that was pretty profound when he said he came back from the Dozier School and they said, wow, they really turned you into some kind of house nigger. Look at you going around, you know, yes, ma'am, and no, sir. And that is profound. The next observation, same person, he said, I could be wrong. I believe the new term for reform school is special education. That could be accurate as well. And again, this is just, you know, euphemisms, because there was no reform here at all. This is just the Dozier School. This is not even a school. This is just total black enslavement. That's what this is. This is a plantation, as Ms. Harrell said. This is not a school. Half the time, they're not even in school. And again, Pastor Gaddy, he came there, he was illiterate, he couldn't even read, and deliberately, we have no intention of informing you, educating you at all. Not that we couldn't, as he stated, the whites, they were getting education, they were learning all kinds of specialized things, including how to conduct experiments on niggers. They weren't doing that for the black children. You could just get out there and work with the hogs and get in the swamp with the alligators and get bitten or have your foot cut off. He details some of that in the book as well, or have your limbs busted up while we make thousands of dollars off of you nigger children. Deliberate. Folks want to respond, either the observation or anything else you want to get in before we wrap things up? Any other observations folks want to make sure they get in?
Yes, I just wanted to say in regards to people who are abusing others and the fact that it's intergenerational, man, my family is like such a poster child for that because, you know, my mother had gotten abused by her father for marrying my father. That there was like a inter-family hatred between my grandfathers. And so she had gotten severely abused, actually put in the hospital by her own father for marrying my father. And my dad also got beaten pretty severely by both of his parents. So when I came up, you know, my mother used to, and I lived with my mom. I would visit my father, but my father actually never hit me. I saw him beat my sister once my entire life, and it was one of the most brutal beatings I ever bore witness to ever. And thankfully, he never put his hands on me, but my mother did. And when my son was born, I was thinking the same way. You know, hey, I was raised the old school Trinidadian way, as we would call it. And I thought that that's what I was going to do with my son. And it was my wife who actually, like, literally transformed everything about the way I functioned, because I think one of the truest things Tupac ever said was with the acronym he had tattooed on his belly, "The hate you give little infants F's everybody." Because what happens is when you abuse children, they know nothing else but to perpetuate it on someone else. And that's exactly what I did. You know, I used to bully kids in kindergarten. Then I used to run the streets through the vast majority of my teens and got into a whole lot of trouble. Thank goodness I never was incarcerated or anything like that. But I did a lot of really bad things. And, when I talked to my wife, she basically would ask me the same questions I'm assuming a psychiatrist would ask. And as she started to help me break down where these feelings of rage came from, I started to self-analyze. And she asked me how it felt, and I told her it was horrible. I didn't like, you know, what happened to me. So she said, "Well, why would you want to do that to our son?" And I thought about it. I was like, yeah, she's absolutely right. Why would I want to do that? So we just made a pact, you know, we will not put our hands on our children, our son ever. And we never did. We could actually talk to him, thank goodness, and he would respond. And because he was raised in a household where he got such heavy doses of African spirituality, he had a different understanding of what morality is in the perspective of, from the perspective of a child and how it relates to their place in the world. So he really took these things to heart and really was a great kid. So honestly speaking, it takes just learning that there's a different way. And then once you learn it, you try your best to apply it. And you can shift your family dynamic to the point where, you know, hopefully you can break that cycle. And I'm thankful that, you know, thankful for my wife, because if it wasn't for her, I would have been wholesale abusive to my son. I know it, because I know what my mindset was. And, you know, definitely that is such a poignant fact. So I would just want to say, you know, the best thing you can do is to try and help the people who are abused and try and be understanding, even though like Gus was saying, Neely Fuller said too, you know, the system is created to make monsters and monstrosities. And once we understand that too, it might be able to help us shift our consciousness in regards to how we relate to one another and just treating each other with some black self-respect. Thank you.
Ashe. Ashe. Other folks.
Hey, I would like to answer the question on that. You know, I think it's difficult to talk about things because it's really no solution that in your mind at that moment. So, you know, to hear these stories, I remember when I was less conscious, you know, to hear these stories, I didn't want to hear that, you know. But as I became more conscious, you know, it's like accepting the fact that, you know, that you're really of the powerless people. You know, it's hard to accept the fact that your ancestors were slaves. You know, it's real hard to accept those things. And I think the great thing that comes with consciousness is once you know something, it changes you, because you can't act like you don't know it now. And, you know, it makes an automatic change in a person, because once you know it, you know, it's hard to not, you know, have that mindset. I think that trauma of knowing that something happened, and regardless of how bad it is, you really can't do nothing about it. You know, there's no solution you have for that person. You know, it makes you really not want to hear it. I'm thinking.
Yeah, that is logical. That is definitely logical. I will say also, I think Dr. Welsing would submit black self-respect probably is a major contributing factor to that as well. When you annihilate black self-respect and don't think very well about black people, including ourselves, I think that has a substantial impact on how your brain computer processes when another black person is telling you that they have been mistreated, violated, really it's just giving you any aspect of their experience, positive or negative. I think when that black self-respect has been decimated, it's very, very easy to have no regard if they're trying to tell you that they have been mistreated, to find some way of blaming them, saying you did that to yourself, if you hadn't been stealing, or if you had been going to school, or you know, you were being a little hoodlum anyway, that's how you ended up there, so if you hadn't been doing all that, you wouldn't have been there in the first place, that sort of thing. I think that is one of the key aspects of the significance, the importance of black self-respect. I think it can drastically change how we think about, how we even listen to other black people. We start to monitor that and just to make an effort to have a little more patience, have a little bit more regard for black people, including ourselves. It will drastically change how we listen to and process what other black people are telling us. Could be incorrect. Also think in the system of white supremacy, I think that is pretty standard to just kind of have disregard when black people are trying to tell you something that is serious, right? If they're not telling a joke or, you know, putting down somebody's parent or, you know, any of that name calling, that sort of thing. But if they're making an effort to be serious and have some sort of constructive dialogue, I think the system of white supremacy is pretty universally committed to, you know, that is just some dumb nigger up here talking. That's kind of the way that we are conditioned to think about black people, to think about ourselves within the system of racism. If you think about other instances when black people have stepped forward to say, you know, I was mistreated, I was abused, and just think of how the system of white supremacy has responded. Rodney King, Daniel Holdsclaw's victims in Oklahoma, his rape victims, since we're talking about sexual abuse, Trayvon Martin, I think in pretty much all of these instances, the black people, some way, shape, or form, they were maligned. They're not to be taken seriously. They're lying. I think Pastor Gatti said that consistently, that he was told he was lying. He was making things up. That is pretty, or you did something to bring this on yourself. Trayvon Martin was out looking to rob and steal people, break into people's homes. He was high on marijuana, so he brought this on himself. Eric Garner, he was out selling cigarettes or doing whatever he was doing, so he brought it on himself. He didn't listen to the enforcement officers. That's a common one as well. You weren't listening to white people. You didn't do what you were told, so you brought it on yourself. That is very, very, very common in the system of racism, white supremacy, to find some way to blame the victim and take the focus, blame away from racist man, racist woman, racist child. That is very, very common. I would say seems to be a principal aspect of how the system of white supremacy operates, how we are trained, groomed to think, unfortunately. Folks satisfied? Anything else? Or folks all good?
I was just wanted to say what you just said took me back to Delectable Negro, because they told so many stories where the white slave master would set up the slave like every day in order to blame him for something that the slave supposedly did wrong so that the master could just abuse him. And they talked about how some of the slave masters would actually love the abuse, like the abuse was such a high form of consumption that they would actually rather beat the slave than eat actual dinner. And that's what I mean when I say, like, they consume us on many levels. So, like, it's really, really deep how cannibalistic white people are. And that, what you just said, just reminded me of that. Like, they set you up, then abuse you and say it's your fault. You know, I don't know if you remember the incident where the white slave master was on a boat with a slave, and he told the slave he wanted him to poach some fish for him, but there was a storm. So he didn't tell the slave to poach the fish inside. He told him to do it on the deck. So he had to stand in the rain, try and create a fire, and try to poach this fish. So he did the best that he could, and he had it waiting for the master when he came home. And the master got so angry because, of course, it looked like garbage because he had him do it out in the rain, in the storm. So he had him strip naked. He made him sit in the storm on the deck and then beat him mercilessly and blamed him for
him making the slave cook the fish in the rain in the first place. And, like, what you just said is just profound, because they've been doing this to us for hundreds of years. And they're psychopathic. There's just no way around it. Psychopathic racial personality. Thank you very much, and I'll meet my line.
The late Dr. Bobby E. Wright, Psychopathic Racial Personality, Other Essays, phenomenal book, top 10 phenomenal book, probably would give a lot of insight as to why Dozier School was allowed to operate for more than 100 years. Folks content? Anything else they want to make sure they get in before we wrap up? Or folks satisfied? I will take it folks are satisfied. If you have questions, comments, observations, you can feel free to drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. We can add your commentary coming up. We have, like I said, we'll be here tomorrow, Friday, and Saturday, so we can add your commentary in as we go. We will be here tomorrow, same program time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Workplace Racism. Feel free, dial in. If you are not going to be able to participate live, but you would still like to submit observations, if you have a situation on the job that you want to hear other folks' thoughts on, possible recommendations or strategies, feel free. You can drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. We'll read it on the broadcast, and folks can share their views, thoughts about whatever situation that you want to share. If you have a problem and or if you figured out something that works, we certainly need as much of that as possible. But definitely looking forward to tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Workplace Racism. Great broadcast. Encourage folks, check out Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy's book, They Told Me Not to Tell. Dozier Reform School Was a Living Hell. Important reading material. If you are a black parent in the state of Florida, you should definitely have this book in your library. It's not even that big. You could, you know, make this a project, you and your offspring, you could read it. If you're doing any homeschooling, you could even make this a part of, if you do English and you have to do like reading comprehension, and you have to maybe write a book report or something like that, great book. Your child could read it, write a report, do an essay or presentation or whatever the case may be. Also, you can get Antoinette Harrell's Dark Days of Horror at Dozier, Rapes, Murders, Beatings, and Slavery, to get a black perspective on what has taken place with all this. I can only say I remember when this started getting more like big attention, what had happened at Dozier. I think it was 2012, 2013. I do not remember there being a strong racial component. I remember we played some of the content on the program, particularly on the compensatory call-in, as information was trickling out about all of this. And I suspected there was a racial aspect to it, even though they certainly did not go into detail like what we heard from Pastor Gaddy and Ms. Harrell. But I suspected that that was going to be the case. So I would encourage folks, definitely do some digging, particularly when there are black sources, black resources to give you more perspective about racism, white supremacy, and what was happening to black boys at this institution. With that, we will wrap things up. Thanks all of the folks for tuning in. And again, should have been any difficulties for people listening at blacktalkradio.com. Today I checked it myself and it was working fine. If you had any problems, just drop me an email. Hopefully TuneIn will be back up and rolling soon. I'll let folks know when I get an update and or when I check it myself and it's working. And again, I'll make that submission so if we can get our content streaming on iTunes as well, so you'll have multiple ways to listen to the live and archived content for the context of white supremacy. With that, as I say consistently, particularly given what we heard from Pastor Johnny Lee Gaddy, the system of white supremacy, whites, they abuse and terrorize us. And then as a result of the stress and strain that we're under, they will say, well, here, why don't you take a sip of this? Why don't you take a hit of this? This will help you feel better. Categorically, a part of our counter-racist code should be sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Certainly, if you're going to be in a vehicle, driver, passenger, even as a pedestrian, you do not want to be under the influence of anything that is not going to help our situation at all. The alcohol, drugs did not seem to help Pastor Gaddy deal with his trauma, abuse at all. If anything, you are funding racist white supremacists, because a lot of the funds for those narcotics, alcohol, seems to end up in the pocket of racists anyway. We're just funding our oppressors, and we're not doing anything to help alleviate our situation. You do not want to be under the influence and have that be the day, the moment that you are pulled over, stopped, come in contact with Daniel Holtzclaw, Darren Wilson, race soldier with or without a badge, as I stated, Deborah Pearl, that was the black female in Ohio, who the racist ran a red light, hit her vehicle, then got out of his vehicle and shot and killed her in the middle of the street. You do not want that to be the day that you bump into a racist psychopath. We want to be sober so we can make the best possible decisions to try to keep ourselves as safe as possible under conditions of constant war. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.